the Library of the Living Dead with your host, Dr. Tuss.
This is episode number 126 of Library of the Living Dead. You are welcome here. Episode 126 of Library of the Living Dead. We just had a cool little intro by Dan Galley that he sent in. Then we had our theme song, Zombie. Coming up is a wonderful story by Eric R. Lowther called Tenure. We got the Manic Minute Movie Mutilation. It's a vintage one on Planet Terror. Got a short story called A Family Matter by David Naughton Shires. We get Brad Zeke's movie review of Attack of the Lederhosen Zombies. There's a Letter from the Dead by Eric R. Lowther. A short story called Crunch by Dan Lemaird. Get Brad Zeke's Zombie Series, number 3. There'll be a few out comments and then an out song sent in by Eric R. Lowther. Now, I've repeated Eric's name 3 times. He's been a good librarian in sending in stuff. Y'all need to send in some stuff so I can put them on the podcast. And that's what makes for a full podcast. So, strap it on, pop open that Corona, kill your lime, slide it down its neck, and let's get ready for episode number 126 of Library of the Living Dead. Hey ho, let's go!
Tenure by Eric R. Lowther. We've all seen the different types of popular zombies over the last 40 years or so. We have plenty of tales of the poor, brain-addled voodoo zombie. We have the grand archetype, the slow and shambling Romero zombie. Note to author Robert R. Best, zombies riding horses are still silly. The fast and truly undead from Zack Snyder et al., and even the infected zombie from the likes of the 28 movies. There are also the funny zombies, the intelligent zombies, and zombie turkeys. I wasn't trying to reinvent the wheel here. I just wanted to take it out for a spin. Ten hut! Every uniformed man in the tiny confines came to attention, though still managed to keep a wary watch on the man seated at the table in the center of the room. General Barkhurst inspected each soldier with a cursory glance before letting his eyes rest on the gaunt, sickly-hued man they guarded.
Forgive me for not coming to attention, General Barkhurst,
the man said through bloodless, paper-thin lips as he jingled the chains that bound him to the heavy wooden chair.
Though you have my respect for your rank, nonetheless.
General Barkhurst had assumed control of the detention complex a scant few days ago. He'd seen these creatures before, of course, but only through the video surveillance and file photos. He expected the zombie to be more menacing, perhaps. But in this room, it just looks small, pathetic even.
At ease,
Barker says he strode purposefully to a chair on the opposite side of the table and sat down, nodding first to a lieutenant, then to a coffee cart near the door. The men shifted their positions to the slightly more comfortable stance and allowed their eyes to rest solely on the men at the table, one living and one not.
I was told you could speak. Frankly, I wasn't prepared for the Queen's English. There's a great deal about this unfortunate situation that many were not quite ready for, General.
Barkhurst stared for long moments at the thing across the table. When the reports first started filtering in, they'd been relegated to tabloid news. Even when bits of proof started to work their way down to the masses, the government continued to deny the existence of the undead. General Barkhurst himself had been made aware of the existence of some sort of virus that made the dead return to life just weeks after the first few small outbreaks occurred. The military and CDC had been able to keep panic to a minimum for months, until the Raleigh outbreak gave the world irrefutable proof the dead walked. No one knew how the necrotic infection got started in the densely packed suburbs, but by the time the true nature of the riots and civil destruction came out, there were hundreds of them. It had taken more than a week to completely sweep every inch of the area. By the time the outbreak was contained, several thousand people had lost their lives to the horde of undead, in joining them, or in simple collateral damage. The military had managed to capture a few hundred for scientific research, quarantining them for study. Muhammad, Jesus Christ, Nostradamus, of all the prophets, who'd have thought the Prophet Romero's predictions would be the ones come to pass?
Yeah, quite unfortunate.
General Barkhurst let his gaze follow the chains that bound the ghoul to its chair, then up to the leather mask that covered its lower jaw. An opening fitted with several thick strands of wire allowed the creature to speak while keeping the undead's teeth safely away from his captors.
You'll forgive the precautions, Mr.
Barkhurst opened a dossier on the table beside him and scanned it for a moment.
Filigrew, is it?
Professor Filigrew, to be precise.
You may call me Harlan if you like, though I find my need for formality to be somewhat lessened of late.
Barkhurst looked at him from under raised eyebrows, then turned back to the file.
Says here you're a professor of English at Duke.
Barkhurst was still having trouble looking directly at the zombie's milky eyes and left his focus on the papers before him instead, then lit a cigarette.
Yes, on sabbatical, you could say.
General Barkhurst couldn't help but look up at that, a small smile tugging at the corners of his mouth. The zombie's skin had turned to ashen gray with only hints at the cheekbones of its previous peach color. This one had no visible wounds on its face, hands, or the visible parts of its arms, not like many of those he'd seen in photos. He leaned back in his chair and exhaled a long plume of bluish smoke.
Look, Harlan, an excellent career officer lost his commission because of all this crap. We're at war for our survival, General Barkhurst. I regret that Colonel Beals was a casualty. I rather liked him, you know. Please, send him and his wife Judy my regards.
Barkhurst used his annoyance at the zombie's flippant statement to remind him that though the body across the table may be dead, the mind was still very much alive. Beals was a friend of Barkhurst, but the colonel had relaxed his command too much, the docile nature of the undeadness care leading to a lax environment for his soldiers assigned to guard the complex. Until recently, the military had done an excellent job in keeping one fact hidden from the public. After 36 to 48 hours, a brain-intact zombie could awaken, recovering much of their memory and even their personality. Before the Raleigh outbreak, no zombie had made it that long. The prolonged siege-like state in North Carolina had allowed the dead now stored here to come to their senses, as it were, a fact that had proven too juicy to remain behind the facility's high walls. Barkhurst had been brought in as damage control to replace Beals, but the damage had already been done. Were the walls any thinner, they would easily hear the chants and songs of the protesters' constant vigil well beyond the complex's gates.
I'll be sure to do that. No doubt he will find gainful employment in the civilian sector. I look forward to an evening's entertainment with him. Perhaps we'll take in a show. I hear Les Mis is touring again.
Barkhurst stared at the zombie, almost forgetting his dead flesh to focus on the self-assurance bordering on the cocky.
I can assure you that won't happen in my lifetime, Professor. Oh, on that I must respectfully disagree.
General Barkhurst crushed his cigarette into the tin ashtray on the table.
Really? Let me feel a little something, Harlan. Something you've obviously forgotten. You're dead. In body, perhaps. But for many of us, our minds are quite alive and well. That does more than make us alive, General. It makes us people, just like you. And as people, we have certain inalienable rights. Rights which the United States military has no authority to strip from us while we are on American soil.
Barkhurst stared blankly for a moment before a fit of uncontrollable laughter burst from him, startling the men in the room.
Rights! You fucking zombies, fill a group, Christ! We are sentient beings, General Barkhurst.
His manner was as civil and detached as Barkhurst was boisterous.
Aside from the obvious metabolic issues, there are no fundamental differences between you and I, save, perhaps, in decorum and mannerly discourse.
Barkhurst stopped laughing at that, his expression turning venomous. He took a slow sip of coffee.
Now that's a mighty fine cup of coffee. I'd offer you some, Harlan, but I know you don't drink. You don't really need to eat, at least not like we do you? No one really knows just what it is you zombies run on, do they? I'd say that's a fundamental difference. Your example is purely physical. I have already admitted there are variances in that regard. So you have... Wait. There was one of those fundamental differences. Yeah, I seem to remember something. Lieutenant!
The young officer near the door snapped to at his command.
Yes, sir. Lieutenant Murphy, I remember something about differences between zombies and us had something to do with food or eating. Wait. Lieutenant Murphy, what happens if a zombie bites a man?
The officer stood silent for a moment, weighing his words carefully.
General, we have been instructed that any introduction of biological material from an infected undead body into a living one will spread the virus, sir.
I think I recall that part, just a little fuzzy on what happens after, you know, to the man that got bit and all.
General, we have been instructed that a human is considered infected the moment the virus reaches the bloodstream. The infected will die in approximately 3 to 30 minutes. The body will reanimate approximately 3 to 30 minutes after that, sir.
And that's a sure thing.
General, we have been instructed that the series of described events will occur 100% of the time, sir.
General Barkhurst, this display is both uncalled for and, I believe, far below your station.
Barkhurst held up a hand, stopping the zombie's admonishment midstream.
Please, Professor, please. Yeah. I'm new to this post. I want to make sure I understand our disagreement. Now, before I was so rudely interrupted, I was going to ask the Lieutenant about the characteristics of a reanimate. Lieutenant?
Lieutenant Murphy risked a sidelong glance at the undead professor, then reset his gaze.
General, we have been instructed that a reanimate is possessed of murderous intent, a single-minded drive to eat human meat and spread the virus. Sir, they remain in this state for 1 to 2 days, wherein they may or may not regain control of their mental faculties, sir.
Thank you, Lieutenant Murphy. At ease. Well, Professor, it seems there may be a fundamental difference or two after all, huh? This debate is purely academic, General, since there is no danger of any necrosapien here attacking and infecting anyone. Necro what? The term zombie is rather offensive to us. Necrosapien is perhaps a more correct label, if one's needed.
I can't believe I'm wasting my time with this shit. Necrosapien, are you things out of what's left of your ever-loving fucking minds? What are you, some kind of meat puppet Martin Luther King? You are zombies, for Christ's sakes. You're a plague, a danger to everyone.
Only for those first few hours, General. To that I will admit. But once we awaken, we're no different in our mental states. We think, we laugh, we love. We still have our faculties and our memories, same as you.
Yeah, except you're carrying the worst bug to hit humanity since the fucking Black Plague. All right.
You were the one that wanted to meet, so here I am. What do you want? I have been elected to speak for the group. Our demands are simple. Pittances, really, in the face of our living conditions.
Living conditions? You're joking, right?
Not at all, General Barkhurst. We have been model prisoners. We have cooperated completely and totally with every rule and request. In this spirit, we would like to negotiate for the basic necessities and recreations we have earned.
Good behavior. You and your kind were the ones that got information to the outside, or haven't you heard the protesters?
In all fairness, your people were the ones that leaked information about us to the world. You can't fault the caged bird for singing, only the cat that paws open the door.
Okay, all right, for academics, what demands could you possibly have? You don't eat, so food isn't a concern. You don't sleep, so bedding is an issue. And as I understand it, you're not sensitive to cold and heat, so the uniform shouldn't be a problem. So what's left?
There's a library on the premises from its previous incarnation as a corrections facility. We'd like access to it.
Barkhurst looked at him for a moment and rubbed a hand over his chin.
Okay, the library. Right.
We would also appreciate a few televisions in the common room.
Oh, really? Well, anything else?
We would like the ability to go outside, to the exercise yard.
Outside? So, is there anything else? I mean, we're here to serve you.
Harlan ignored the sarcasm.
Yes, one more thing. The disappearances must stop.
Barker shot the zombie a hard look and drummed his fingers on the metal table.
What do you mean?
We aren't stupid. We have nothing better to do than talk to each other. We've obeyed your rules by not gathering groups greater than 4 within a 20-foot span, but that doesn't mean we don't speak to each other. I have an eidetic memory, General. I never forget a face or name. When we arrived, we numbered 374. Our number now stands at 312. I know each man and woman that has disintegrated due to decomposition or bodily damage, and I know each that ended their existence because they simply couldn't go on. 13. That leaves 49 unaccounted.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Please, don't insult my intelligence. We know, and to varying degrees, we understand the scientific investigation into our condition. Don't think for a moment we wish anyone else to become as we are. Had we the choice, we would not be either. It's clear that a few of us are being siphoned off as each week passes, logically to support research. It isn't necessary to steal us away in the night to perform your experiments. We understand the only way that science has to fight and cure this condition is to study us, even to the ultimate death of the subject. Maybe at least agree to logic?
Barkhurst sat up slightly. He knew full well the complex housed a scientific team, that Harlan's observations had been correct. What he hadn't expected was comprehension and understanding from the undead, even grudgingly given.
Let's assume the logical path, then, that, for the sake of argument, such science is needed.
Where do you propose the subjects would come from, if not here?
You simply assumed we could be treated as cattle. There are quite a few that have no hope, no families. Perhaps their bodies are failing to a point they have virtually no quality of life remaining. these are willing to volunteer to donate their living minds and dead bodies to further a cure. In short, General Barkhurst, we ask only that you treat us like the living, thinking beings we are, not the vile, unthinkable ghouls you believe us to be.
Barkhurst nodded slightly, more to himself than to the undead across from him.
You said you wanted to negotiate. Well, part of negotiation is you give me your demands, then I give you mine. I already have everything I want. If you start disregarding the rules now, believe me when I say I have no qualms issuing the order to put each and every one of you on a slab for good. If I give you what you're asking for, what's in it for me? We are prepared to issue full statements, in our names, in our own words, and completely uncoerced, to our families and the world at large. Aside from the disappearances, we would be accurate in saying we've been well treated and are in as good of condition as circumstances will allow. We'll ask the various groups and factions to stop their protesting and other activities in our names, as well as affirming to the world that we are thinking, feeling, and in our right minds. In addition, many of us are willing to sign waivers, releasing the government and the public at large from any liability stemming from our infections and consequent reanimation. I would be shocked if there weren't thousands of lawsuits claiming punitive monetary damages clogging North Carolina's dockets already. Naturally.
Barkhurst closed his eyes and rubbed at them with a thumb and forefinger.
I'll have to think about it, he finally said, then rose from his chair. Take your time, General. We have nothing but. I appreciate your time, though, and attention in this matter and other matters. I look forward to a positive working relationship with you and your staff.
Harlan raised his hands as far as the manacles would allow. Several of the armed soldiers in the room tensed until the zombie held out his right hand in a classic gesture. Harlan cocked his head to the side and smiled as far as his palsied face would allow while the general stared at the offered hand. Slowly, the general extended his own across the table and gave Harlan's hand two quick, professional pumps. To his credit, the general didn't flinch.
You have a firm handshake, General. Have you thought about politics?
Why? You going to be my advisor?
Oh, no, not me, General Barkhurst. I'll be returning to my own career.
It's a long road to hoe, Harlan.
Not so, General Barkhurst. Not so,
Harlan said, still smiling a death's head grin around his receded gums.
After all, I do have tenure.
The history of man exists only from his need to tell stories. They say that dead men tell no tales. And to that, the dead will say, as you are now, so once was I. And as I am now, so ye shall be. Death may have changed their stories, but they still have them, and they still want them to be told. Within these pages you'll find tales of unholy alliances, and what could happen should the meek really inherit the earth. Some will tell their tales in their own words, while others will let their actions speak. You'll see the dead walk with purpose, and find what happens when man is so brazen to think he can put the dead to his own purposes, sharing space with the tales of vengeance for the dead. Vengeance for the living speaks here too, as does what happens when man's need to play at divinity destroys with his creations. And, for fans of Area 187, almost hell, the place where the dead speak the loudest, the author has included both a look into the past as well as a peek into the future. So, come and listen to the Dead Tell Their Tales. The Dead Tell Tales, a collection of zombie short stories from Eric R. Lowther, author of Area 187, Almost Hell, is available at the Amazon Kindle store from Marame Publishing.
Dr. Puss's Manic Minute Movie Mutilation. Dr. Puss's Manic Minute Movie Mutilation. Dr. Puss's Manic Minute Movie Mutilation. Here we go. We start right now, though, no hesitation.
Dr. Puss's Manic Minute Movie Mutilation. In this chapter, the good doctor is regaling in what he thought was a terrible buy. Then, when he viewed all of the extras, he believed it was a hell of a buy. But most of all, the one half of the entire movie, which was played as one movie, but in all actuality was, well, actually two movies, but with a bunch of the same people in them both, especially the hot as hell blonde. No, not that blonde. This is a real blonde, and she was blonde in both of them. The movies, that is. The ones that are actually one movie, but I had to buy both of them separately on DVD. Got it? Good. The doctor is in.
What we're talking about here in the land of Library of the Living Dead in general, and the Manic Minute Movie Mutilation in particular, is the fun as hell and gross as hell and sexy as hell and neat as hell and cool as hell. And did I mention it was fun? One half of Grindhouse, the part called Planet Terror, which I had to buy on its own, as well as Death Proof, because, well, the guys will make more money off us fools who can't wait for the one disc that will have both movies on it. Yeah, I'm a fool, but in a good way, mind you. After seeing Grindhouse in the theater, I just couldn't wait to get my hands on the DVD, so I could watch it all over and over and over again. And you know what? I did, I do, and I will continue to. Most especially Planet Terror, and you good librarians will say to yourself, well, yes, Dr. Puss, Planet Terror had zombie-like people in it, so that's a given. And I'd say, well, yes, indeedy, but that ain't the only reason. There's also some really cool as hell puss flying all over the place, too. Nah, I don't mean like me flying around in the house in my Dr. Puss outfit and cape. I mean like purulent exudates popping out from almost every orifice you can think of on those almost zombies in Planet Terror. Man, it was gross, and it was excellent. The one bit with a tongue, no pun intended. Get it? Bit? Tongue? Never mind. Was just so full of pussy goodness. Now, kids, don't try to spell out pussy. It would look rather bad if someone saw you writing out pussy. P-U... Well, you get my idea. But there was a bunch of pussy goodness. Oh, your great Uncle Woody was there. I mean, like, squeeze and the pussy blood goes flying. I'm so glad you're listening and not reading this. And you want to talk about a hot-looking one-legged woman? Sound like an oxymoron now, doesn't it? But it ain't. Rose McGowan is a quintessential cherry darling, and boy damn howdy is she. But you want to know who your good old Dr. Puss was smitten with? I love that word, smitten. Well, do you? I'm going to tell you, even if you don't want to know. She was in both movies of the same movie that was put out as two separate movies, as Dr. Dakota Block, and she's just absolutely beautiful. She's Marlee Shelton, and what a knockout she is. Quentin Tarantino makes an appearance here too, as what is only called Rapist Number One, and he'll so remind you of creepy as hell Richie Gecko. And does his pecker become a pussy record, does it? Wow, made me cross my legs when that scene went on. This one is fun as hell, good librarians. Pussy as hell, too. I like it. Good doctor is sitting here wondering if Rose McGowan actually realized that a woman can get wood. And the doctor is out.
A Family Matter by David Naughton Shires. That morning, Ben had woken up just like every morning, stumbling to the bathroom, rubbing his eyes and scratching his balls, had a pee, brushed his teeth, washed his face, got dressed, and then went down the stairs to get his breakfast. But that was when normality ended. His father sat at the table as he had done every day for the full 15 years of Ben's life, but his normally crisp white shirt was stained with blood. On the table in front of him lay Ben's mother, her chest torn open, her insides now outsides. His father turned and through clouded white eyes looked at him. With the last remaining vestiges of humanity, he reached past the shredded pink cloth of Ben's mother's blouse and tore a piece from the meal in front of him and offered it to his shocked son. Feeling the heat of his digestive fluids building up in his stomach, he opened his mouth and let go an eruption of thick, rancid vomit. It covered his father's now dead eyes and filled the gaping hole in his mother's once ample chest. From behind him came the familiar sound of the staircase creaking. Oh, crap. Beth. She was only 10. What would she make of the grotesque scene that had appeared in their small kitchen? Turning, he saw her march into the kitchen, her schoolgirl tie secured around her forehead like someone out of a Rambo movie. She carried a well-oiled cricket bat. Pushing Ben to one side, she exclaimed, "Hey, dickwad, move aside. I got a zombie skull to smash." Without a moment's hesitation, she swung the bat and met her father's head with a mighty whack. The bat split in two and impaled itself deep in the brain of the man who was once their dad. Sweeping her hand across her forehead, she brushed aside her fringe and turned to face Ben. Adjusting her belt, which now held an assortment of screwdrivers, knives, and garden tools, she looked up at her elder brother and said, "What are you waiting for? We got a world to save, big bro." Turning on her heels, she started down the hallway towards the front door. Without once looking behind, she placed her hand on the door handle and slowly started to turn it, saying, "Hey, dickwad, you coming?"
Hey there, everybody. Brad here. I got a movie review for you. I do writing and podcasting over at purefandom.com, and occasionally I get screeners and trailers and, you know, previews of movies coming out and stuff like that that they send over to me to check out. So I got this one a few months back called Attack of the Lederhosen Zombies. Yeah. So let me tell you about this one. Snowboard, skis, snops, and zombies. I mean, that sums up about everything you need to know about Attack of the Lederhosen Zombies. Well, maybe not everything, but with a title like that, you should know what to expect. The good news, it is 77 minutes that is fun to watch for any fan of The Living Dead. This movie was shot in the Australian Alps, and we are graced by some amazing scenery in the movie's opening panning shots. These shots help provide the broad sense of the scale of wilderness surrounding the storyline. Further up the mountain, we meet our snowboard zombie killings crew. So we have Steve, who is a professional snowboarder with a wild streak, and his girlfriend, Blanca, is mostly responsible for where he is at and his career, because he's kind of a douche. And then there's Josh, an up-and-coming snowboarder who happens to have a cousin who loves zombie movies. What falls on the last day of the season is some great snowboarding. Mark Soboda, I think that's how you say his name, he's currently a professional snowboarder for Red Bull. He performs the snowboarding stunts in the movie. The guy is awesome. So, how do we get the zombies? Weather manipulation, because, you know, what could go wrong? With the season coming to an end, the local entrepreneur of the ski lodge has discovered a way to extend the season. How do you do that? Well, of course, you engineer your own snow using a special green liquid. While it isn't trioxin from Return of the Living Dead, it is a nice nod, and the effects are the same. Once someone is infected, which, you know, happens really quick, you know what happens. Bite, infect, repeat. So, surviving the winter apocalypse. As the apocalypse unfolds, our heroes Steve, Josh, and Blanca are joined by Rita, the local barmaid. Of all the characters, Rita stands out the most. The others, well, they're just aren't enough reasons to get attached to him, but Rita, she's awesome. She's an older woman, and she's got the snops, and she's good to go. They also manage to do some rather stupid things in the process of surviving. Still, zombie killers on snowboard, guys. That's something you don't see every day. There's a wide variety of zombie deaths, which is where the makeup department shines. Quite a lot went into making these different effects, and while not all of them hit the mark, there are some great scenes. There's a snowblower one where they get run over a zombie. Perfect. Awesome. Because that's what you would do, run somebody over with a snowblower. As a horror comedy, this movie holds its own. It isn't something that nails every line, but there are some jewels to be heard. On a scale of 5 severed hands, I give this one a 3. You can find this movie on iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, and I believe it should still be on demand. Go ahead, look it up. Just look up the trailer on YouTube, and you'll get a good idea of it, and check it out. So, there you go. Attack of the Lederhosen Zombies. Hope you like it.
Yeah! Woo! Give me some ammo for my shotgun. I ain't got no time to last very long. Oh, the lonely days are here, I'll be staying at home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. I don't care how many of those things I gotta kill. Oh, I just can't leave my home again. Oh, lonely days are here, I'll be staying home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. She wrote me a letter, said it was a letter from the dead. Listen to me, people, don't forget my words, my baby's undead. Anyway, give me some paper and a pencil. I've still got all those things to kill. Oh,
was staying at home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. Said it was a letter from the dead. Listen to me, people. Don't forget these words, my babies, I'm dead. Anyway, give me some ammo for my shotgun. I figure I'll kill myself in the long run. Oh, the lonely days are here. I've been staying at home. My baby done wrote me a letter. My baby 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 wrote me a letter. Wrote me a letter. My baby wrote me a letter. It was a letter from the dead. My baby wrote me a letter from the dead. My baby wrote me a letter. My baby wrote me a letter from the dead. From the dead.
This letter is by Eric R. Lowther. I called off sick last night as soon as I saw the news. Then I emailed this to everyone. I came to the parking lot after the rest of you did this morning on my way out of town, long enough to paste it to every door of this godforsaken building. And I've even left it on your friggin' windshields just in case you ignore my email like I know a lot of you do. You all treat me like shit, talking about me behind my back, stealing the zombie stuff I had in my cube, and just being douches in general. I'm just George, the office weirdo to all of you, unless you need your computers fixed. Or when you need me to get rid of the viruses you people pick up from all the porn sites on the company laptops that you beg me not to report. Yeah, I'm talking about you, Phil in accounting. You're not alone, though. Everybody make sure to ask Bob, the sales VP, about his membership to the Hung and Young. Well, I hope you've seen the news. It's starting. I've told everyone for years this was going to happen. No one believed me. Now I'm on my way to my undisclosed secure location, and the rest of you are going to be zombie food. Every one of you fuckers deserves this. And just to make sure none of you golden parachute assholes on the top floor can buy your way to salvation, I've left you all with a parting gift. Check your credit cards. Check your bank accounts. Go ahead. I'll wait. Did you check? See, you shouldn't treat someone like crap on your shoe. Not when that someone is the guy that sets up all the cybersecurity and has everyone's passwords. A little stop on the HR side. A little cut and paste of social security numbers. And all the other little details. And voila! For the next few short days, that money actually means something. All of you are helping me pay for the last little bits and pieces I need for my fortress of badass zombie survival. So I hope you all had plenty of good food and gasoline, and medicine, and all the other stuff you're going to need for the rest of your short fucking lives tucked away already, because you sure as shit won't be able to buy stuff now. I hope you all get to feel them tearing you apart. I hope you all get to suffer in a zombie's belly. I hope you all get to watch your kids, your mom, whatever it is, you fuck. I hope you have to watch them eat your lives. It's what you've been doing to me for the last 5 years. Your friend till the end. And it's the end, so you ain't my friend. George Kerwin. Crunch by Dan Lamyard. 5 minutes after leaping out of the shower, Eugene was in a shirt and tie and headed down the road. He yawned as he jumped from station to station looking for some actual music to get him going. Every station was talking about civil unrest in Washington, civil unrest in China, or civil unrest in Jerusalem. As his car rolled through the early morning mist, Eugene caught the tail end of a song. Then the news broke in with further information about civil rest. "Not you too," Eugene whined. He leaned over to change the station as a man shambled out of the dark and in front of his car. Eugene caught a glimpse of the man and bolted back into reality. He locked up the brakes as the man was slammed along the hood. His head went through Eugene's windshield with a sickening crunch. With a whoosh, the car's airbag deployed. Smoke poured out from the car's brakes as it screeched to a halt. Eugene sat shocked behind the wheel. With a trembling hand, he turned off the radio. "Oh no! No, no, no!" screamed Eugene. "You walked right in front of me!" From behind the airbag, the man looked up at the sound of Eugene's voice. His eyes were washed out and milky. He began to twist his body in the shattered windshield. The glass dug into him as he inched forward. "Don't move, man!" Eugene said as he tried to get his cell phone out of his pants pocket. "I'll call someone!" The man slapped the bloody palms of his hands on the windshield and let out a deep moan. As Eugene gasped, the man pried his hands into a sharp hole around his head without noticing his hands were being cut to ribbons. Eugene recoiled in horror and hollered, "Dude, what are you doing?" Moaning, the man jammed his arms through the broken windshield. The skin of his forearms was peeled off on the jagged glass like a fruit skin. He wiggled up through the glass and tore through the airbag. As the airbag hissed flat, while the man clawed at Eugene's face with his bloody hands. Screaming, Eugene stomped on the accelerator and his car rocketed forward. The man pawed at him as the car swerved back and forth. Trying to fight him off, Eugene flailed about, hitting the horn and bumped the radio with his knee. The radio blared the latest emergency report as Eugene's car bounced over a curb. It smashed into a telephone pole, showering him with shards of broken glass. Eugene threw open the car door and fell out, letting out a loud moan. The man crawled through the windshield and into the driver's seat. Kicking the door shut, Eugene trapped him in the car. Gasping for breath, Eugene got to his feet. He stumbled around his car as he shook the stars from his eyes. Then he was hit by an oncoming car.
The Zombie Series, Post 3, Madison Bridge. The fog was rolling through the streets this morning when I left the house. Had a few more rain showers come through last night that my tomatoes surely loved. There's still a while to wait yet, but man, I cannot wait until those things are ripe. I'll have to turn them over to food stores for distribution, of course. That whole, it takes a community thing. but still. I get my pick out of each crop, and there is nothing that beats a fresh tomato. While I was out running this morning, I tried to take a picture of the fall growing through the trees at the Madison Bridge, but it actually didn't show up on the photo much. There is nothing overly significant about the Madison Bridge that I know of, other than it goes over a creek used for runoff water. Just thought it would have made a cool picture. Other than that, the only thing I can say is that I walked over it on a daily basis heading out to protect the wall when I was with the ZWAT. Didn't see anybody out on the trail this morning, and it was extremely quiet. That does tend to be the case when it's just a little after 5 a.m. though. Nothing more than the occasional chirp of a bird, but then about 10 minutes into my run, I heard a single gunshot from a rifle far ahead of me. Guess one of the monkeys on the wall either took out a lone deader or fell asleep with his finger on the trigger. Since none of the alarms went off after the shot, I didn't think twice about it and just kept on running. Planning on making it past the intersection in the trail on the next run, and I'll take a picture of that. Interesting story about the light there. A little bit of history for those who don't live here. Well, that's it, so just keep running. Hey, I'm Brad Zippers, the author and narrator of this fictional account of life some 20 years after the zombie uprising. It is based off running challenges that I do in real life. Lucky for you, the internet does somewhat work in the apocalypse, so you can read the posts and see the pictures mentioned in the series. Just head on over to thezombieseries.com to check that out. Feel free to drop a note there or become a survivor and join in the story by leaving your comments. Thanks for listening.
That's it, good librarians, for episode 126 of Library of the Living Dead. We have a forum at goodlibrarians.freeforums.org, all lowercase. Please join and join in the conversation. My email is lotld@outlook.com. And now I have a special request. If you have contact with any of the old good librarians, I would love if you would hook them up with the podcast. The podcast is found at lotld.podomatic.com. That's lotld.podomatic.com. Let's get the old gang together and have us a good time like we used to. We need some letters from the dead. Thank you, Eric R. Lowther, for the many letters from the dead that you've sent me. They've all been wonderful. You tell me it only takes you 5 minutes once you get an idea to write a letter. So all you good librarians can write a letter too. It's real easy. And you get them read on the podcast. What I need is letters from the dead, long and short zombie stories, songs, promos, and such. I would really, really like one of you good librarian authors to send me a zombie book to read in chapters on the podcast. Those were always one of the favorite things that I did in the previous podcasts. I want you to know that I'm still a happy boy, and I'm putting out these podcasts every week. We got all kind of cool stuff coming up next episode. So stay tuned. And now, like we always do, we're going to go out with a song sent in by Eric R. Lowther.
White sheet from your head down to your feet. They put you in a big black box and cover you up with dirt and rocks. And all goes well for about a week, and then your coffin begins to leak. my pinochle on your snout. They eat your eyes, they eat your nose, they eat the jelly between your toes. A big green worm with rolling eyes crawls in your stomach and out your eyes. Your stomach turns a slimy green and pus pours out like whipping cream. You spread it on a slice of bread, and that's what you eat when you're dead. And the worms crawl out, the worms crawl in, the worms that crawl in are lean and thin, the ones that crawl out are fat and stout. Your eyes fall in and your hair falls out, your brain comes tumbling down your snout. And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, they crawl all over your dirty snout. Your chest caves in and your eyes pop out, and your brain turns to sauerkraut. They invite their friends and their friends too, they all come down to chew on you. And this is what it is to die. I hope you had a nice goodbye. Did you ever think, as a hearse goes by, that you may be the next to die? And your eyes fall out and your teeth decay, and that is the end of a perfect